You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the fabulous Feinsteins, 54 Below. Before we get started this evening, just a polite reminder. Please take this moment to silence your cell phones, and also there is no flash photography, please. Please welcome Michael Kilgore.
Everybody, and welcome to the Feinsteins 54 Below podcast, where we take you behind the scenes at Broadway Supper Club. I'm Kevin Ferguson. I'm an assistant programming director at the club, and our guest today is the Grammy-nominated, NAACP-nominated R&B soul singer-songwriter who is getting back on stage and ready to give the world what he's got. Michael Kilgore was born in Orlando, Florida, before moving to Nashville as a singer-songwriter after attending Florida State University. This led to his growth in theater, and he started on Broadway, where he was mentored by the one and only Billy Porter, and he grew as a performing artist. His credits include Motown the Musical, Book of Mormon, Hair, The Wiz Live, Jesus Christ Superstar Live, Jason Robert Brown's Songs of a New World, Sondheim's Into the Woods, Smokey Joe's Cafe at the Muni, the list goes on and on. For his Feinsteins 54 Below show, Kilgore pulls off his bubbly persona with the joy of the holiday season with familiar holiday nostalgia, together with this creative twist and his multi-octave range, his powerful and elegance. It stretches across music genres while his lyrics color the outlines of each of our personal experiences. Everybody, please help me welcome the one and only Michael Kilgore. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
I am so happy to be here, Kev.
Listen, I am excited for you to be here. All week, I have been telling everyone, like, yep, I get to interview Michael Kilgore. You don't. Hey.
Oh, my gosh. Not that. I'm so excited. I really, really am. This concert is going to be great. I'm so excited to get back onto the 54 Below stage. It's been years since I did a show there.
Yeah, it's been a minute. But we got a lot to talk about before we get to the 54 Below show. Let's just talk about how you, as Michael Kilgore, are feeling after this pandemic world we're living in. Is this the first time you're getting back on stage since everything went crazy, or have you been able to do some shows since the world reopened?
Actually, I've been on tour right now promoting my new single, The Man in the Barbershop. So I've been doing a lot of performing on stage. My first big show, honestly, was I headlined Bryant Park. And there was a huge outdoor concert this summer. And that was really my first chance to try out my post-COVID legs on stage. And I knew that I missed it, but I didn't know I missed it that much. It was like healing to be on stage. I feel like whoever you ask will probably say the same thing in terms of like this time that we spent away. It was really good time away. And that's weird to say. It's weird to say, yeah, but it was good to be away because it put things into perspective. Yeah. So I have that love that I had at the beginning again, because I just know what it does for me, as well as being able to enjoy what it does for the people who are enjoying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yes. Oh no, we are definitely enjoying it. But I wanted to talk about during the quarantine, were there any random new hobbies that you took up? I mean, it was a break from the performing. I learned how to cook a lot better during the quarantine. Anything you took up as a hobby outside of performing?
I started writing scripts.
Yes,
it was something,
Michael,
I never thought I could do, but I started writing scripts and TV pilots and little 10-minute plays and that sort of thing. Oh, yeah, what? Baby. Oh, I'm doing things that I didn't think I could do. So when I say it was good time, like in that time, it really forced me to go, what else is in there? What else do you got?
Would you consider the writing like a comedy or like a drama or...
I was giving myself homework. So I was like, try to write a comedy, try to write 1 hour, try to write a drama, try to write something science fiction. So I'm not sure if it all was good, but now I know that I can actually sit down and do it.
Yes.
that's it.
Yeah, that is so dope. Well, hopefully we can see, I mean, your songwriter, singer, you can add script writer to that, playwright to that. Come on, Michael, the sky's the limit.
The goal, literally the sky is the limit. Well, actually the sky feels like the floor now. It's just all of us who are still here post-pandemic, we're survivors. We're superheroes. Mm-hmm. I mean, this pandemic was meant to wipe out people.
Yeah.
It was so sad that that's what these things do. And for those of us who remain, like, I think we have to really respect the fact that our life gets another opportunity to go on. So if we're gonna be alive, we might as well do some living in this life.
Yes.
And that's been a huge priority for me coming out of, because we're not quite out of it, but coming out of this pandemic is I wanna make it count.
Mm-hmm.
And not just for somebody else, but for myself.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Wow, that is so true. The idea of just like remembering you're a survivor and taking it day by day and just being appreciative of being here and seizing the opportunity. I love that. That is definitely something a lot of people need to be hearing right now. Now, going back to inspiring people, who was one of your earliest inspirations? Like, how did this journey of becoming the star you even started? You were born and raised in Orlando, Florida? Is that where it started?
It started in childhood. I'm a pastor's kid, so I was always singing in church.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big thing for me. But I would say one of my earliest influences is probably a singer named Daryl Coley.
Okay.
And I don't think a lot of your listeners will know who that is, but he's worth Googling.
Okay.
He is best described as a Stradivarius of singers. He is truly one of the best technicians I've ever listened to. He has a style that no one else could even try to replicate, and I have definitely tried, and it is not the same. He is one of the kings of ad-libs. Like, he can just stretch and stretch and stretch a story. His presentation's flawless, and he was a gospel singer that I just was like, oh, I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of my earliest musical influences. And then as you grow up, like, my list becomes crazier and crazier as I grow up, because it was like Daryl Coley, and then I was like Fiona Apple, and then it was and then it was Brandy.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course Whitney and Renee Fleming, Leontine Price, UC Bierling, and of course my mentor,
yes,
Billy Porter,
the one and only
William Porter. So yeah, I feel like I have a nice big grab bag of influences to pull from.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the thing that I'm very thankful to have had teachers and artists around me that kept introducing me to things that didn't seem from surface like it would be anything about me. And then when you got into it, you were like, oh, this is completely about me. I'm completely invested in it and included in it. That was kind of what steered my first album, was I was like, I'm a part of this story, and I need people to understand that you can't have the art without me.
Mm-mm.
Like, my blackness, mm-hmm. my queerness, mm-hmm. all that stuff goes into it. And it's been a real blessing that people have received the work so well, because in a way it's as if they said, you can tell us the truth and we'll accept it. We'll receive it.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful place to be in as an artist, where it's like, oh, I don't have to pretend I can tell the truth.
No, I would say as a storyteller, you are so captivating, and definitely you tell the story and do the work. Like, it's so awesome what you do. And then the idea that all of those influences are what are in the back of your mind while you're singing, like, it shows. I can see and hear all of those different references and influence. Like, that's so dope.
I always feel like that's the highest compliment, when people are like, oh, you're such a great storyteller. Because growing into a musical theater performer, I was always like, I just want to be the male Bernadette Peters. I just want to be able to tell a story as well as she can. I want to be the Bernadette to someone else's Stephen Sondheim someday. Yeah. Like, I just feel like there's only one Bernadette Peters, and she's such a great translator of his work. That was always my joke. I would joke with Jason Robert Brown about that. I'm like, I'm your Bernadette Peters.
and he has to agree. I mean, who else would it be?
Well, I mean, he's got a lot. He's got a lot of people who are exceptional at his work. So I'm always looking. I'm like, who's going to be my Steve? Who's my Steve out there? And maybe I'm my own Steve.
Maybe.
And that's okay.
I mean, maybe. You already have such great achievements with your nominations and the NAACP and the Grammys. Do you feel this is the beginning, or you've been in it for a while and this is time? Or how do you feel about those nominations?
It definitely feels like the beginning. I was having a conversation with Sekhon Sengblo, who was incredible in all her ways. And we were talking about, this was years ago, we were talking about the different phases of a career. And she's like, Michael, I want you to always enjoy being the new guy in the room. You're going to keep being the new guy. You're going to keep going in there because there's something about your newness that means that no one is polluted to you. You get a chance to present the way you want yourself presented. And when I was brand new to the Broadway community, it was lovely to get an opportunity to, I don't even want to say prove, but share who I was and allow people to decide what side of the fence they wanted to be on when it came to me and my talent and my energy and all that. And now that I'm in this recording world, it's really nice to get that opportunity too. And I'm sure, like, as I'm writing, as I'm creating, producing, all that sort of stuff, I'll be brand spanking new. So I definitely don't feel like I've arrived. I feel like I'm coming in and I'm going, all right, well, okay, since the light is on me, let me shine.
Definitely. I feel anybody who's not on the side of the fence of being a fan of yours after hearing you perform, they just must be crazy or something. Because it's just so awesome what your voice can do. How would you even describe your sound, your music? Like, what genre? I don't even want to put it in a box, but what would you say?
I would like to call myself the compendium of the Black musical experience.
Get that tattooed, Michael.
That is a long tattoo, but I say it that way because I have this t-shirt I love to wear that says Black music is American music. We have colored every genre in the American music lexicon, and it wouldn't have happened without maybe one of the most gruesome things in history ever happening: the enslavement of Black bodies brought to America. There's so much from Africa that we have taken with us in our souls and our bones that have influenced what American music is. There's like this big conversation. There's this artist in country music, Mickey Guyton. And they're like, is she even country? And it's like, well, yeah. But the real question is, you know, you look at Elvis Presley, you're like, is that really rock and roll?
Okay.
Because it was a theft. It was highway robbery from the sounds that Black Americans make innately. And that's what I wanted to do. That's what I continue to want to do, is to reclaim the stuff that's ours. You can play with my toys. I'm not selfish, but the toys are mine.
Yes.
The toys are mine. And I really want to make it very clear that when these musical moments happen, when people are trying to decide what's pop music and what's soul music and what's rock music and all that sort of stuff, the roots are clear. And I think that Black Americans are owed a huge debt of gratitude for creating musical culture in America. So it's my goal to make sure that nobody forgets it.
Listen, because I feel like that is so true, and we do forget it sometimes, and I don't think there's enough reminders. So I'm here for it.
There aren't enough reminders, and it's because we see who writes the checks and who produces the shows and who... I ask this question to people all the time. What's your favorite musical written by Black people? And it's almost
hard
like...
to get to.
The lights go out. The lights go out. And a lot of times people will be like, oh, well, you know, Dreamgirls. And I'm like, it wasn't written by Black people. I'm like, you better say The Wiz.
At least
The Wiz is written by Black folks. That's why I have such a love and respect for Michael Jackson, because he's doing something that's so audaciously Black, audaciously queer. Mm-hmm. It's difficult for people, you know, it's mm-hmm. art. So I don't know that I am allowed to put myself on the same level as him with the work that he's done, but that is what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do something that feels like I went to the couturier and it was made to my specifications. It's got to feel that way.
Yeah, definitely. No, we love Michael R. Jackson. We just had him at 54 with his show. It was just so dope. He is visionary and I love the way he tells his story.
I find it so hard to call him Michael R. Jackson because I'm so used to calling him Michael Living Jackson because of his Facebook page. So I'm like, is it Michael L? No. His middle name is not actually Living.
Right, no. Sometimes we get caught up in people's social media handles, and mine is just Kevin Ferg.
The social media.
People are like, is your last name just Ferg? Yes. Yes, my last name is just Ferg.
Absolutely. ASAP.
Thank
like ASAP
you.
Ferg. I'm hip. I'm cool. I'm a cool mom. I'm a hip mom.
Yes, just like that. No, I think that's so true what you were saying, though, about appreciating Black work that's from Black minds. You know what I mean? And which one of those stories really stick out? And I really could only think of The Wiz. But I'm also have The Wiz in the front of my mind because I remember one of the first times I saw you on screen was in The Wiz Live. And it was a quick moment, but I remember that moment because you were just so fierce and I was an instant fan. I was like, what is going on? Who is this?
That experience was, man, it was so excellent. Yeah. It was so, so excellent. And through the years, people's like opinions of it have come out and that people have had lots to say about it. But what I will say is I was so blessed to be in the company of such incredible Black artists. And as years have gone by to watch everyone bloom and you're looking at Beyonce at Coachella and it's like, oh, those are some of my castmates. And you're looking at Megan Thee Stallion or Rihanna on tour or your favorite TV shows or Hamilton or all sorts of musicals that you love and plays you love. And to see those people just, popping up. I really feel like that's going to be a musical that in 10 years time, well, actually you can do it now, but in 10 years to look back at that cast, it'll go, and this all came from that one little television moment. It's incredible. But I will say that that has been one of the blessings of my career is that I've been able to be in a lot of rooms where I didn't feel like a token. I was in the rooms where I was surrounded by incredible Black artists, Black talent, Black queer artists, Black queer talent. Yes. And to be able to feel less like I had to show up for all of us. And I got to feel like a human being. And we each got to have our own experience. And we each got to show our own beauty in the prism that is Blackness. Yes. This is going to be a really Black podcast.
Yes, it is.
Guys, this one's a really Black one, guys. So in case you were wondering, this is that one.
Come on, get into it.
Very Black, very queer, 54 below. That's the new motto.
Yes.
Very Black, very queer, 54
Boom.
Below.
That's it. I'm calling the owners right now. I got to tell them I got a new campaign. No, totally. No, I think because it's musical theater, you can tell when you're not being tokenized because there are so many rooms where you are. Have you found in the past feeling tokenized? And that's why these moments where you're around other Black creatives stick out so strong?
Well, I think whenever you put a Black body on the stage, it becomes political. And I hate it because the first thought doesn't tend to be, oh, they were the most talented. They go, oh, what are we trying to say? Oh, what's the meaning behind this Black person getting the role? It's like, well, they are fierce. That's the meaning. We wanted the fiercest and they were the fiercest. So there have been times where I felt tokenized. There have been times where I felt like I was being seen only through the lens of the white imagination.
Wow.
And that is, Billy Porter said in an interview, he was like, they really tried to see me. They really tried their best. And in saying that, it does acknowledge, but you didn't. It acknowledges that.
I saw
that.
It's you like, tried.
You tried. You tried so hard, but there is something to be said about being in rooms with Black people, and I'll be clear, black people who like
period.
Black people.
Come on. That's another topic. Yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, that's a whole other topic. But it's something special about being in those rooms, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to make sure that humanity is first, and that color, if I'm on stage, it's a black person. So it's a black experience because I'm black. But we're not playing at being black. I am existing as a human who is a black person. So I don't have to put on blackness because it's already on. I might as well go ahead and tell this one. I was in a show where they were like, you know, just can you put a little bit more, you know? It was basically like, put some more stank on it, like blacken it up. I said, I just don't want to. And not that I don't want to, I just will not be doing that. And the word I used, every black person knows what word I use. I said, I will not be blanking for you.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Yes. Let me use my good TikTok verbiage. You know what I mean? I just I won't say it because I don't want to get blocked. You know what I mean?
But we know.
We
know.
Yes. I was like, I wish y'all could see him because we both did the like fingers to the eyes. Like, I see you. Yeah, we won't be blanking today. And that's something that I hope this pandemic, and I'm like doing a fast little sharp turn to the left. I hope this pandemic has taught a lot of artists, black, brown, queer, white, straight, cis, all of us, to like really advocate for yourself in these rooms. As much as the director's vision is at the forefront of what they're doing, you're brought in and the weight is on you. You're gonna be the one on that stage. Your body's on that stage. And if it's something that you cannot stand beside, if it's something that you cannot rationalize or make okay, then you need to really advocate for yourself. You definitely need to do that. And for me, I don't wanna be in a show that makes it safe to be everything but me. A lot of us have been in rooms, and I can speak from my experience, and so I won't speak for women or for Asian folks or for Native people, but like as a black person, as a queer person, I've been on stage where it was safe to be white, but it wasn't safe to be black, where it was safe to be straight and not safe to be gay, because it was like, oh, we're gonna tear down all the barriers that make it uncomfortable to be white. Oh, there's no racism in this play. Black people and white people intermingle and we don't even see it. But as for a white person, but as for a black person, it's like, but you know, let's deal with the like alcoholism and your father being gone on stage. It's like, no. Then if we're gonna do that, then they're gonna have to deal with the white privilege. If they're not gonna have to deal with that, then I'm not gonna deal with this. Or I was like, we're gonna do a play where black people and white people get along all the time, but we're gonna make the axis of the play your misery as a queer person and how difficult it is to be gay and how horrible it was to be outed or how in the closet you are. And I was like, no, if we can imagine a world without racism, let's imagine a world without homophobia. Okay. Or let's do the world as it is, where they both exist.
Let's just show it what the true tea is, okay?
Let's just show what the true tea is. So yes, that was the long answer to what could have been an easy yes. Yes, I have felt like a token, but it isn't like a cry for me situation for me. I think a lot of us are coming back to theater right now, having spent 2020 reconciling within ourselves what is and is not acceptable for how we want to continue to do our career.
Yes.
I don't feel special or unique in that. I think a lot of us are having these thoughts and these conversations with ourselves, with our friends group. And now that theater is opening with the teams and with our castmates and making it clear that, you know, I don't want to present a perfect world on stage. That's boring. And I think it doesn't do anything to help the audience. But I do want to feel like if I'm portraying anything, the nuance needs to be there. And thicken it up so that I'm more than two dimensions. I want you to be able to see me from all sides if I'm up on that stage. And if that's too much to ask, then this isn't the right piece for me.
Yes.
And I think that's okay too.
To just recognize that.
To recognize that you don't have to say yes to everything, that you don't have to be a part of every moment. I think that's one of the hardest things for us because we're so itinerant. Yeah. The work comes and you just want to like hop at the work. What's next? But I would much rather be trying to figure it out on my own in my apartment than being in a process where I'm miserable every day because I am being forced to blank.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We don't want no blanking.
Or to shrink. Yeah. Ooh, no blanking, mm-hmm. no shrinking. That's on my mind. It's on my mind quite a lot. And I was like, I'm not going to... I was so vocal last year that it's like, you're not going to embarrass yourself. But as soon as the theater doors opens, hey guys, I'm back. Whatever you want to do to me, whatever you want to say to me, however you want to treat me, I'm fine. I'm like, no, baby. That's not going
down.
It's
a brand new day, okay?
Yes. Everybody get up.
Yes.
Because
it feels like for sure, especially with a lot of the new plays on Broadway and new productions on Broadway having a lot more diversity in the teams and everything. Are there any shows or shows that are reopening that you're excited to run back to the Broadway theaters and see? You want to be an audience member for any show that you're excited about?
I mean, here's something that's just big to me. I did the first national tour of Book of Mormon, and one day a friend of mine was like, oh, come to my room and sing a song for me. I like wrote a song. I just wanted to hear what it sounds like. So I sang the song. I thought the song was great. And he and his writing partner, you know, start writing stuff. They write a show or they write another show. He starts writing scripts and plays and all this sort of stuff. And now it's Douglas Lyons, Broadway playwright. Yeah. The level of pride is like, I got to watch the process and it was not easy and it took a lot of time. So I'm really proud of Chicken and Biscuits. And so I can't wait to get back to see that.
We love Chicken and Biscuits.
Chicken and Biscuits. Literally, we love the play and we actually love Chicken and Biscuits.
No, I literally saw it twice. I thought it's just such a feel good experience. And the team's fun, real cool people.
Right. And then Thoughts of a Colored Man, which is like permeated with blackness. Mm-hmm. That's something I'm excited for, and like my brother Brian Terrell Clark is in it, so it's like I got it. Like that is one of my hearts, so I'm so proud of him and that piece. Plus, Candy Burris is on the producer team, and as a fan of Real Housewives, I had let's just call a thing a thing. Okay.
I'm saying, yes, this makes sense.
yes. I really love Kill Interchange.
Yeah, I'm waiting.
And I actually got a chance to see that. That's when I actually got a chance to see. So I'm excited to go back and see that again, because I went on a night where I was like, this was incredible. And they were like, oh, we had so many issues. And I was like, where?
That's hilarious.
So if I loved it on like a night where they felt like they were having, you know, it's previews, I can't wait to go back to see to see it again. But I think that I have a conflicting views about the state of theater right now, because I'm so excited to see so many black centric things on the Broadway stage. I'm so excited to see something that feels like diversity, but I keep thinking about war and the idea of like, oh, you send all these black troops out first, so like if they get mowed down, then you can like bring out your white troops. I was like, I really hope that the support will be there for all these shows that are reopening Broadway, because I don't want them to go away and people go, well, I mean, we tried, there just wasn't an audience. It was like, it was a pandemic. They were the first shows out the gate. Do not do that, because we are not dumb.
We'll be back in the streets.
We're not dumb. We'll be right back in the streets. Like, people don't understand. We'll be right back in the streets.
Quick.
Okay? Right back out there. So I want to see the system change. You know what I mean? And to be brutally honest, I would love a world where theater is not focused on Broadway.
Yes.
We're too focused on Broadway being the place where theater happens. And theater is happening all over the nation, all over the world. And good theater with incredible artists happening. And it's not just in Chicago. I mean, even though these places are incredible, it's not just Chicago. It's not just D.C. It's not just Dallas. It's in all these little cities. People are putting on shows.
And writing
putting on
checks.
Plays. And writing checks. And I think that it's important that we support these artists, especially the ones making art in the most difficult places to make it, where, you know, it's... I did Book of Mormon first national tour, and it was fun to do in New York.
Oh.
It was fun to do in L.A. It was fun to do in San Francisco. It was less fun to do in Des Moines. It wasn't miserable, but there are certain things you can say on the coast that when you get in the middle of the country, people are going, I don't know if I want to hear that.
Or they're laughing at different parts of the joke, and you're like, that's...
Or they're laughing at parts of the joke that you're like,
that's not the part you're supposed to laugh at.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, we have to show love to these people and do our best as theater lovers. I was saying this to someone recently. It was so awesome to see a Tony Awards like the one we had this year that felt like it was really about the theater community.
That was cool.
The host is Audra McDonald, chilling. You know what I mean? It just took me back to the olden days when like Angela Lansbury mm-hmm, used to host, mm-hmm. you know? But then I thought to myself, how cool would it be to see Audra McDonald at the Muni?
Yeah.
Like the mm-hmm. Audra McDonald going, oh, yeah, I could, I just mm-hmm. love doing theater. And I will say, Audra McDonald don't need to be doing theater anywhere where she's not getting paid like she's Audra McDonald. So I'm going to say that.
If y'all have the budget, don't call her. But.
I know, but still, it's like, it would be so awesome to see people like her. Mind you, there's like nobody like her, but you know what I mean? You know, like doing work. The Beyonce of Broadway. Jeez Louise, there literally is nobody like her. But just to see that sort of thing, because I want to give gravity to people who are making theater outside of that little collection of blocks.
Yeah, definitely.
It is such an important place. Yes, it is. But it's not the only place. And honestly, I think it's getting harder and harder to tell stories that are really challenging mm-hmm. there. It's hard to challenge the people when it's like, it's got to be liked by everybody. And it's got to like be unoffensive. And it's got to be easy mm-hmm. to take. And it's nobody's fault, but like the price.
Yeah.
It costs a lot to put it up. So you got to get a lot of money to offset mm-hmm. the cost. So I get it, but I still hate it.
It's very, very commercial, very... a lot of capitalism within it, just the idea, you know what I mean? Of it, how big Broadway is.
It is what it is, but it's like I can hope and dream, and that's really what this is. It's like it's a hope and it's a dream that I believe can mm-hmm. come true. I just don't know how, but I believe
it can.
These
could be the beginning days. Like, this is a shift. If this shift stays, it will definitely shift the stories on stage and everything. So hopefully we just, like you said, this Absolutely. Isn't just like a little... moment or phase, blip. Yeah, fingers crossed.
This is not a phase, it's who I am.
Totally. Listen, so on that, let's talk about how you are this like Black queer like trailblazer. Would you consider yourself an activist, or do you feel that weight? I just feel like a lot of people are looking up to you these days.
Oh my goodness, I think that activist, I can say to a degree, yes. And I have to say it that way because I have so many friends who are literally throwing themselves on the front lines. They're the ones getting mm-hmm. thrown in jail. Mm-hmm. I have a really high respect for what they do, and I don't take it lightly. So I try to respect it even in speaking about the little bit of artivism mm-hmm. that I do. Yeah. But my responsibility right now is to be honest. And I think that there's something like activism in just mm-hmm. telling the truth and saying, you know, this is the world as I see it. This is what matters to me, and I will do what it takes to make sure that what matters to me is on the docket to discuss. So I feel like activism is like key in making art that matters. There's gotta be some bit of activism in it. And I got my first email from someone who went to go see my show who didn't like it recently. And he was like, you came and I paid good money to see you, and you talked about how you felt about the Obamas, and you didn't have enough respect to call 45 by his name, and you mentioned that you were gay, and you know, it was clear quick into your show that you were gay, but we didn't have to discuss the fact you were gay. And I thought to myself, I'm famous. I immediately was like, I made it.
I got
like,
a hater.
It made me feel so good. And it wasn't even a hater, it was like, you were listening. If wasn't nobody else listening, mm-hmm. you were. And that thing permeated your spirit so good that you went home and had to write a whole email about it mm-hmm. because it's in there. He's still chewing on that bone. I'm almost positive he is. And that's the point. That is the point. First of all, if you could tell I was gay, then why does it bother you that I said it? Since you know everything, like it shouldn't bother you. And also, I have a love for the Obamas. I absolutely do. And I wrote a song based off of something Michelle mm-hmm. Obama said. So I'm gonna mm-hmm. tell that story because I'm theatrical and sometimes my concerts turn into cabaret and sometimes I start talking and that's a part of the Michael Kilgore experience. And now you know mm-hmm. that's what it is and you can choose to come back or not. But what you can't do is tell me how to do my art.
Yeah.
That's up to me. So I stand by that. there is, oh my God, Jamie Sapero is a friend of mine. And he and I did a live together a while back, and he said something that I thought was really important. He has strong opinions. There are people he agrees with, there are people he disagrees with. He is vocal about both. And he was like, even the people I disagree with, I am here for the upliftment and advancement of all people of color, even the ones I don't like. I want all of us to advance. I want all of us to do well. And I'm going to fight for all of us, even the ones I don't like. And I was like, that's the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
For me, it's clear that that's what it's about. It's sort of like, even if you don't like me, even if I don't like you, that's what it's about. And for me, it's not just based in color. It's not just based in gender expression. It's not just based in sexuality. It's not based in any of that. I want all of us to find a space of freedom where we're free enough to hear and see each other so that we can truly support one another. Truly do that. And even the mask mandates and stuff like that has really highlighted for me how selfish and how bad neighbors we are. We're really bad neighbors with each other. And I just want to like make it a priority for me to be a better neighbor and to really, you know, support somebody else. And it's like, you see that one crazy person chasing after the napkin blown in the wind because we just don't want to litter. Be that good a neighbor. You know what I mean? Be that good a neighbor that you're like, oh God.
Not litter.
I don't want that napkin to be out there. And it's like, if we can do that, then we can also speak up when we're seeing like police violence against black and brown bodies, when we're seeing violence within the black community against trans folks, when we're seeing racism coming from a white establishment against black folks, but coming from white people against their black citizens. We have got to do that. And I will say that my focus as of late has been squarely on black people. If I'm going to have the conversations about what we can do and how we can do and all this sort of stuff, I'm having them at home first. And I'm having a level of trust that white people are doing that within their homes and straight people are doing it within their homes.
You know what I mean?
Because it's like, it's not, some of the stuff y'all need to just Google and figure out. It's not our responsibility, baby.
Go ask Google.
I do not need to give you the spark notes on my queer experience.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
And if you do want a little bit insight on my queer experience, go listen to my art. You know what I mean? I put it.
Go listen to my art. Yeah. It's in the art.
Yeah.
That is in
now,
there.
Now, speaking of your art, my newest obsession, Man in the Barbershop, that is some black, queer, that is like so specific for us, by us.
It is very specific.
I love it. Yeah. And how do you feel like it's being received? I see it being received very well, but how does that feel to see everyone like loving it?
It's been really overwhelming. It's been overwhelming and lovely and incredible. And honestly, what I love about it is I was watching an interview that Toni Morrison did, and she was speaking about, as she was starting writing, there were all these African writers that she was really drawn to as mentors in her mind because they were writing with a kind of shorthand that made it clear that they were writing for black people.
Yes.
Because there are certain things that you and I, we've done this even on this podcast today. You don't even have to say it because we have a shorthand where it's like, you know. So I don't have to explain things to you. And the Man in the Barbershop, I felt like I was able to use my shorthand. And the people who got it, got it. But also within that shorthand, it allowed me to tell the story so clearly for myself that I think there are a lot of people who like don't know the exact experience of being a black man sitting in a black barbershop in under the that kind of weight. And they get it. They get what it is to like see somebody that may be unattainable and to feel that feeling. And to dream. I just love the idea that like I wrote this song about how beautiful black men are, first of all. And then about the desire. And no, there's no villain. No one's wrong for how they feel. No one's wrong for who they love. And there's a level of respect at the end of the song. I'm really proud of that. I'm really, really proud of being able to do that because it was the kind of song that I didn't know I could write. It was the kind of song that I knew I needed though. When I was young, I used to want a song like that. And I remember the Drew Hill, Somebody Sleeping in My Bed, and the video came out. Yeah, that was my jam. So then the video came out and it was like, the woman being a lesbian was like, the gotcha. It was a joke. And it was like, the audacity. And I'm like, well, I don't want being gay to be the joke.
No.
I don't want that to be the gotcha. I want it to feel lovely and okay. I will say that's something I think I learned in theater, that like as a Black person, I didn't want to seem like the mm-hmm. surprise. I wanted it to be like, oh, that's just another human having a human experience.
Yes, I feel the same way.
And because of that, like, as a queer person, I want to feel like just another human having a human experience.
And I'm going to sit here and remind you that I'm gay a million times and you're just going to be okay with it. Like,
well, honestly, I can't wait for being gay to be boring.
Right?
Like, I can't wait for it to be boring. Totally. Like, for people to be like, mm-hmm. who cares? Because it's like, mm-hmm. who cares? It is so boring. It's in fact so boring that gay people are getting divorced now. You know what I mean? We just got married.
And we already getting
like,
divorces. Yeah.
We're already mm-hmm. getting divorces. That's how boring I want it to be. That it's just sort of like, whatever.
They get married, they divorce.
They have kids, the kids are bad. Like, you know what I mean?
I know, same I stuff. Love The Man in the Barbershop. I feel it is a story about wanting someone you can't have, but the idea of putting it specifically in a Black barbershop, that story, I don't even know. I don't even have words because I'm just so appreciative that someone did it.
Because we've all been there. We have all been sitting and been like, oof. All of a sudden you hear the soundtrack of Waiting to Exhale just playing.
Listen, I got my little shortcut. I'm Loretta Devine. putting the food in the car.
Just, I got a few slices of ham, you know.
Listen, they on this podcast like, what is going on? Listen, Michael Kilgore, I am so excited for you to come back to 54 Below. We got to talk about the show at 54, though. Is there any surprises that you can, like, give us little hints on? Any guest appearances? What's the set list going to be like?
I actually do want to keep things really on the hush, but I will tell you that it's a little early because we will not quite have made it mm-hmm. to Thanksgiving, but I wanted to give you my head start on the holiday season. So this show is going to be a Born Black Christmas. I'm going to do my version of what I wish, like, the Michael Kilgore Christmas mm-hmm. special on would be. So it's going to be a good time. There's going to be a lot of original music, but I'm also going to have a few surprises, some singers coming to like sing some songs with me. And I'm definitely going to be singing some stuff from my album, A Man Born Black. And I just feel like it wouldn't be right if I didn't sing The Man in the Barbershop. So
I'm going to cry.
I'm going to cry. So I'm going to do that. But I really wanted to imagine the soulful holiday moment for people, because I grew up with Boyz II Men mm-hmm. Christmas and Mariah Carey's Christmas album and Stevie Wonder's Christmas. So it's like, that was always my dream to do something that felt. And then, of course, Donny Hathaway this Christmas, you know, so I always wanted to be like, how do we create that feeling for now? Mm-hmm. So I'm going to put on a little show for y'all. It will definitely be season's greetings. We're welcoming the holiday time. Plus, it's like, we didn't really get to do Christmas like mm-hmm. we wanted to last year. Let's just stretch the season out. Let's go crazy.
Have you seen the meme of like Mariah Carey like hydrating, getting prepared for the season? But it's a cartoon of just like, it's really silly. I gotta send it to you. But it's just like, so true that the holidays are coming. Everyone's feeling it already, but people are ready for the holidays.
And apparently we better be very ready, because it's taking 30 years for packages to get to you. So if you have not bought your Christmas presents by now,
they're going to be
gonna
some
arrive.
2022 gifts. You're going to get it for Valentine's Day.
Yes. Literally Valentine's. Okay. They'd be happy with that.
Listen, Michael, this has been so fun chit-chatting with you. I feel like I could talk to you all day, but we would be going on tangents about Real Housewives and not Broadway. So,
oh, yes, absolutely. And movie quotes and 90s Black movie quotes.
You know what
sure.
I mean? So let's save that for part two. But today was amazing. Y'all have to catch Michael's show. You can catch Michael Kilgore at Feinstein's 54 Below on November 18th through the 20th at 7 o'clock. Don't miss it. The box office is open right now, ready to get those tickets sold for you. Michael, do you have anything else you want to tell the folks? A nice little word, a mantra you live by? What you want to say?
I think the only thing I want to say is I really want to see you. I sincerely want to see you in the audience. I'm crafting this, and this is a special moment that nobody else will get, just the people in the audience at 54 Below. So I'm really, really, really looking forward to doing something special with and for all of you. I'll see you in November.
All right, everybody. Thank you again for listening. Once again, I am your host, Kevin Ferguson, at Kevin Ferg on Instagram. Follow me.
You've been listening to the Feinstein's 54 Below podcast, part of the Broadway Podcast Network. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.